Hey everybody, welcome. This is Mordechai Plotzker. Welcome to the shareenjoyment.com, and thank you everybody for joining us this evening to discuss Parshas B'Shalach, week in review. There's so much to say about Parshas B'Shalach, but first I want to wish everyone a beautiful Tu B'Shvat. I hope everyone had a great time enjoying delicious fruits and making a Shachiyon on them. So continuing the cadence of discussion with regard to psychological freedom, we had introduced in Parshas Bo the need for Klal Yisrael to take on three tasks, two mitzvot and one bakasha. The two mitzvot were HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lachem Los Chadashim and the Karban Pesach, and the bakasha was to request gold and silver and clothing from the Egyptians. So with regard to all three, they all have one common denominator, and that is psychological freedom, which is that in order for us to really break free mentally and behave as a free people, we had to take their God, which they serve, and slaughter it, and then spill the blood on our doorpost in order to remind our God, so to speak, to pass over our homes. Obviously, God knows where we live, but this was more of a messaging to the Egyptians. Second, we were never as slaves in charge of our own time, and now, fortunately, we were in charge of our time. We declare the new month, and as a result, all the young children and the chagim that accompany the year will be declared by the declaration of the new month. And of course, the third, perhaps most critical, which is really transcendent throughout even Parshas Shemot, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu hinted that this is what we were going to be doing, and then reiterated again in Va'era, and then solidified in Parshas Bo, to borrow from the Egyptians gold, silver, and clothing. Why? Because a free man borrows, a slave takes. And in order, even though the clothing, the gold, the silver, everything was us, was ours, we still had to go about the route of a free person in order to behave and acclimate ourselves to our newfound freedom. Now, in the beginning of Parshas B'Shalach, we are introduced to HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling us, "Vayi B'Shalach Paro Asa'am, V'lo Nachamim Lakim Derech Eretz Plishtim Ki Karov Hu, Peni Nachamim Be'erosim Nechama B'Shavu Mitzrayma." Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us that we're not able to go the easy route. The shortest distance between point A and B is a straight line. Instead, HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes us a long-winded way, which gives, you know, rise to discussion among the leadership in Paro's office as to what exactly is going on. Clearly, they see something unusual, and this, of course, gave them a little bit of time to prepare to chase after us. But what is all this all about? Why do we have to go a difficult route? Why? Because Shevet Ephraim calculated the exodus at an earlier time, and it says, so we all know the pasuk says that after a great deal of slavery, after the period of time has elapsed, we are going to emerge very, very wealthy. So they picked a fight with the wrong people, the Plishtim. And the Plishtim annihilated over 90%, as Medrash Tanhuma describes, of Shevet Ephraim. And the atmos of Ephraim, the bones of Ephraim, Shevet Ephraim, were literally at the doorstep of Mitzrayim. So when the Jews, when it's time for them to leave, Hashem said, no, I can't take them this way. If they see this, they're going to turn around and go back to Mitzrayim because they're going to think that this is going to be their end. And they'll never move. They'll never get out of Mitzrayim. We as a people will still be immersed. We lost 80% of our people in Mitzrayim that, you know, obviously didn't want to leave with us. We'll lose the other 20% too if they see this. So psychological freedom, psychological thought, is what God is actually doing at the onset of the Parsha. And now we have to see how all of this emerges, right? The Jewish people, as they walk out, they say, Hamabli ain't kvar ben Mitzrayim. Are there not enough graves in Egypt? He took us out to slay us over here in the it was stuck between a rock and a hard place. Behind us, we have the Egyptian hordes, these Sheshmeos Rechev, right? So the Chazal explained why Sheshmeos, why was there so many, right? It was actually 1.2 million. Each chariot, you know, each chariot was comprised of three individuals, one that, you know, steered the horse and two people that had bows and arrows. So this is really what the Romans, you know, later on, copied in their own gladiator type events. So we're talking about 1.8 million people if there's Sheshmeos Rechev. Excuse me, but why Sheshmeos? Because Sheshmeos Eleph is what we see at Mamet Har Sinai. So the Egyptians tried to cut when it's Zohar Kodesh. Now the Jewish people say, Matitzak Elai. What is this whole thing, Matitzak Elai? Matitzak Elai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know, you're crying out to me now. Now's not time for crying. The crying, Banitzak al Hashem, you did that already in Va'era. Now God is saying to you, you know, it's time to move. And when I say move, I mean move without you know, any delays, and delays are usually caused by people who are saying, hey, I'm not sure if this is the right thing to do. Ma'a, says my cousin, Moshe Mayevsky, is the Rosh Hashanah from Mem, which is the longest tefillah, Hashem, Hashem, Karachim, V'chanun, Erech, Apayim, V'achesed, Emes, V'tachet, V'alachim. If you add up all those words, you'll get to 39, and 39 with the kolel is 40, which is okay with Mem. And then the shortest tefillah is Kelna Rifan Allah, uttered by Moshe Rabbeinu on behalf of his sister Miriam, who had been stricken by Tzaras later on in Sefer Bamidbar. So Hashem is saying, Matisak Eli, now's not the time for long or short tefillos. Now's the time to get moving and to get going. And this obviously builds a certain level of, you know, tempo and enthusiasm into the dynamic of leaving Mitzrayim. And then we see something revealed that it says that the pasuk explains to us that the Ananiya Kavod, right, was Vayamod Me'achareyam, that it stood behind them. What does it mean it stood behind them? Normally, the Malachim always go first, right, because they're the ones who sing Shira to Akash Baruch Hu, right? And now everything seems to be going in the opposite way. The Pesukim are describing that the Jewish people actually were ahead of the Malachim. It says Vayamod Me'achareyam. What does it mean Vayamod Me'achareyam? That this is the first time HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealed his true love for Klal Yisrael as the Kedushas Levi brings down, and that's why the Malachim actually stood in deference to Klal Yisrael, and that's what it means Vayamod Me'achareyam. Now we approach the Yam, and the Yam has a very interesting discussion with Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu stands up according to Medrash Rabbah, and he says that you should split B'Shem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Yam says, who do you think you're talking to? I was created before you. I was one of the celestial bodies that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, I was part of Ma'aseh Bereishis. You are just a simple human being. What do you mean? Where do you come to tell me what to do? So where does the Yam get the chutzpah to say this? And actually, you can see in the pasuk something fascinating. It says that Baruch Kadim Aza, that there was a strong easterly wind that split the Yam, right? So the word Aza also could be referred to as Aza's Panim, as somebody who has a little bit of chutzpah. And the Yam had a lot of chutzpah. In fact, if you look a little deeper and you look into the Archaim, the Kli Yakar, you'll find something even far more fascinating, what gave the Yam a reason to speak up. One of them is very uncomfortable, which is that the Jewish people walked out with Tetzel Micha. So the Yam said, hey, wait a minute. Why am I going to split for one, not the other? After all, the Egyptians worship me every day, and the Jews don't. And besides, they're walking out with Tetzel Micha. The second is that it's actually perhaps even stronger than that claim, which is that death did not occur at sea. Death occurred through the Eitz HaDaas. Eitz HaDaas is growing in the land. Misa was born into the world because of Eitz HaDaas, right? Yodea Tov Ra. So the Yam says, I don't want to have anything to do with this stuff. You know, you want to go ahead and split, I'll split, but I'm not going to be the caveat or the conduit, rather, by which the Egyptians will die, because that is by Hiba Shalach Paro. There's a Lashon Tzara over here. What's a Lashon Tzara? In as much as the Jewish people are successful in ridding themselves of their enemy, right? As Moshe Rabbeinu says right before in Sheni, he says, you're not going to see them ever again, right? Whatever you see now, you're not going to see later on, right? It still is, these are still the Briyam, the creation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem has a little bit of lamentation, a little bit of sadness by seeing the exodus of the Egyptians. And so that is also somewhat strong, because the Yam says, what do I need to bring death into the world? It wasn't because of me. In fact, and that's the reason why, explains the Arachayim, that the sea always spits out its dead. It does not swallow. It always pushes out the bodies, little Elena, no one should ever know from such things, to the seashore. And that's where people find things. They don't sink to the bottom. They float, and then they get pushed out by waves. And each wave, by the way, says the Zohar Kaddish, is another expression of Anan Beinan Lemehevi Kame Malka, that we desire to come back to our eternal source. Why? And what is that all discussion? And I divert a little bit, because when the Yam was created, right, we say that the Imabdal be Mayim Lamayim, there was a Mayim Alyonim, a Mayim Tachshonim, there were upper waters and lower waters. Yes, they do correlate with one another. They evaporate, and then the rain comes back down from the clouds, and then they evaporate, and it's a cycle. But each wave is trying to eclipse the other, saying, I'm trying to come back to my eternal source. And as a parable, we can say that if somebody's, you know, riding in a first-class ticket on an airplane and then gets up to stretch, you know, his or her legs and walk around a little bit and get, you know, comfortable, and then someone comes in and sits down in your first-class ticket and you're relegated to the back of the plane, you're still struggling to get back to that front first-row seat. And that's exactly what their waves are trying to do. They're trying to get back to their eternal source. And that's what our neshamas, in fact, are trying to do, because the neshamas were created on high, and our guf always tries to lead us astray, but the neshama says, wait, I have something better. Now, I wanted to actually go back to our discussion, Baruch Kadim Aza, that when the Yam split, says the Arachayim HaKadosh, it was so powerful. It was like the recreation, the recreation of Masa Bereishis, because when the Shira began, the Yam said, wait a minute, if this is going to bring about such Shira, then I'm going to stay split. And that Kadosh Baruch Hu says, no, I'm going to break you again. And that's exactly what ended up happening with Baruch Kadim Aza, that the Yam split, and then it listened to the Shira, it wanted to stay split, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu reverted it back to its kolchos. It explains the Kedushas Levi something fascinating. It's almost the kaviyachal that HaKadosh Baruch Hu separated H2O, hydrogen and oxygen, separating these two chemical compounds which comprise water. Why? Because you can actually see it in the pasuk that Uvnei Yisrael holchu ba'yabasha b'soch hayam, that they went on dry land. We all know, especially those living in the Northeast, we're undergoing a little bit of a storm right now. So we're being warmed up hopefully by Torah a little bit. And so we know that water comes in many different forms. It could be snow, it could be mud, it could be, you know, just, you know, puddles. It could be anything. But to say that Baruch Kadim Aza, to say that the Red Sea split and people were literally walking, not on mud, being stuck in the mud, but they were walking on dry land. You know why? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you have a chutzpah mouth. Do you know why Moshe Rabbeinu has the right to tell you to split? Because this bracha was given over to Yaakov Avinu. V'yitin lecha elokim mital hashamayim. What does it mean, v'yitin lecha elokim? Why does it say, v'yitin lecha mital hashamayim? What does it mean, elokim? Elokim refers to shamayim v'aretz, the ones, the celestial bodies that service mankind. And what are those bodies? The sun, the moon, and the oceans, and everything. We have a certain level of control over all of these things through the bracha of Yaakov Avinu. And so Moshe Rabbeinu says, my Alta Zaydi Yaakov Avinu had this bracha. He received it from his father, Yitzchak Avinu. And now we have the memshala, we have the power to separate even a celestial body such as this great sea, this Red Sea. And that's what the Yam had to listen to, because oftentimes, kaviyachol, when we say like the gabbai thinks that the gabbai is the president of the shul, right? The president delegates responsibilities to the gabbai, and the gabbai says, you know what, I've been doing it for so long. When it comes to kiddush, I know exactly how much to order, this and that. So the gabbai sometimes takes that role and thinks that he is the president. And as a result, we sometimes lose sight as to who the president really is. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took over control, so to speak, of the Yam and reminded the Yam that the Yam reports to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the Yam reports to these, so to speak, lieutenants, Moshe Rabbeinu being the chief lieutenant, the chief captain of the Jewish people, has the right to enforce this splitting of the sea. Now, I actually wanted to go on to one other topic, because I know we're short on time, and this topic... I can talk about this for well over 2 hours, but there's one pasuk here that really strikes a chord, and I hope it does with all the female listeners on the call. It says Vatikach Miriam, that Miriam took out harps and musical instruments, and she started singing Shira LaHashem, that she started singing praises to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we all know that what's missing in this world is a little bit of praise to Hashem. We know that if we would just say a little bit more, Shira to Hashem, if we would just sing a little bit more, it's very easy to bring about the Yeshua for the Jewish people. right? So we say, Az Yashia Moshe, that Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, but the word Az is a power word, but it also refers to in the future. In the future, we will sing again. And now we have, not too far afterwards, that Miriam takes out harps and flutes and different musical instruments. And the question is, where in the world did she get this stuff from? Where we don't have any record of anybody taking out anything musically oriented at Yetzias Mitzrayim. We say that we ran out of Mitzrayim so fast that the bread didn't even have a chance to rise. So if that's the case, you know, how did the women, especially Miriam, take out these musical instruments? And what did they think that they were going to be doing with those musical instruments? And the answer is that, as my cousin Meyer Katz once said, maybe 10, 15 years ago, he said something so novel that I never forgot it, and I think it's something very, very powerful and worthy of repeating, that women have this power, this confidence. And they brought this, they said, Miriam and all the other women said, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing all of these makos, there's got to be something good that's going to come out of this. Meaning that the rishis, the evil of the giant, and all of the pain that they experienced, and now HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us to leave, we better grab something so we can thank him later on. We don't know when it's going to happen. We don't know what the circumstances will be. We don't know how we're going to do it, when we're going to do it, and what it's going to look like. But we know that something powerful is, we know that something really special is emerging over here. And they took out these musical instruments, and that's what they did. Why and how? Because they had confidence. And I think that this level of confidence permeates the entire parsha, whether it's Nachshon Ben Aminadav jumping in, Ad below Sifasav, as they say, until he couldn't barely breathe, and then the Yam split. Whether it's Moshe Rabbeinu having the confidence during the Makom Choshech, Chacham Levi Kach Mitzvos, that as the Jewish people are plundering the Egyptian homes in a very nice way, politely asking, can they please borrow this and that? Moshe Rabbeinu is running out to find Yosef, as the Medrash brings down, through Sarach Bas Asher, who informed Moshe exactly where Yosef was buried into the Nile River. And then Moshe runs over and says, Alei Shor, Alei Shor. He writes this on a Ksav. It's the same Ksav later on that is used to bring about the Egel Azov, which again is something, a very unique discussion that we can have later on in Parshas Kisisa. But this, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu said to Yosef, you know, Pako Pakadati, you promised that the Jewish people will be redeemed, and I'm coming to take you out. So we know that Yaakov Avinu was Malava Yosef, who turned out to be a king. Moshe Rabbeinu, who the leader of the Jewish, elevates himself by taking out Yosef. He takes out the bones of Yosef, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu elevates Moshe by taking Moshe Rabbeinu's life, so to speak, with a neshima, with a kiss, which is the highest level of taking someone into the next world. And we know that when it comes to Kriyas Yamsuf, the Pasuk says, Hayamra av Ayanos, that the sea saw and split. Mara Yam Vayanos, what did the sea see that made it split? Arono Shel Yosef, the bones of Yosef. Do you mean to tell me, and I'm asking, that you have all the Zekinim, Aaron, Moshe, you have all the Shifteka, all the heads of the tribes, and you have everything, you have Nachshon Ben Aminadav, yes, you have everything there, and you're splitting because of the bones of Yosef? And the answer is twofold. Number one, Yosef HaTzadik was the one who was Vayanas Vayetze Achutza. The same word, Hayamra Vayanos, that the seesaw and split, the word Yanos, is the same language as Vayanas Achutza. That when Yosef felt compromised, he ran outside because he knew that it was unsafe for him to be inside. And Yosef, being the Shomer Arayas that he was, is a beautiful conduit that protects the Jewish people. It's the protection of the Shmira of Arayos that made Yosef so great, and that is the reason why. So since Yosef went against his natural inclinations and went outside, the Yam was forced in the same way to go against its natural inclinations and split. And also reemphasizing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu stresses the importance of fidelity in the Jewish home. And when we have infidelity, God forbid, and as we saw, you know, with Zimri and Cusby and all of those other things where Balak and Bilam were unsuccessful in using language to hurt the Jewish people. But when they unleashed the Midianites upon the Jewish people, that really was something that we couldn't really recover easily from. So we know that this is something that is stressing upon all of us to remain steadfast in that regard. And then circling back, of course, to Ephraim as we began our discussion, Haben Yakali Ephraim says the Pasuk in Yirmiyah and Parak Beis, Pasuk Beis, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu refers to Ephraim. And we know that David HaMelech spent his entire life battling the Pelishtim, in a way, so to speak, to bring the Nichon back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be Menachem of, to, so to speak. Is it possible for a Klal Yisrael to be Menachem of Avinu Shebashamayim? No, it's not possible. But David HaMelech made every effort to do so. And that's the Nichon Avelim, that the first form of Nichon Avelim was David HaMelech practicing his vengeance upon the Pelishtim in order to pacify HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as Chazal bring, as is brought down. And so I think that if we take B'Shalach between the fact that we have the Shira, between the fact that we have the motivation that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us at the beginning to protect us psychologically, and the challenge, Amabli and Kvarim in Mitzrayim, are there not enough graves in Mitzrayim? And to summarize all of this into a succinct thought, the cadence of psychological freedom does not end in Parshas Bo, because it didn't end in Shmos or Ve'era. It continued to parallel and move forward into Bo and now into B'Shalach. And now we see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's desire for a Klaius to be strong, steadfast mentally, because when we are strong in our minds, it's possible for us to accomplish great things far beyond what we ever could ever have imagined. And this Parsha has so much between the Jewish people rising to the occasion, even at the end. Yes, there was the concept of Mun, which was a challenge for us. But when it came to the Battle of Amalek, right, we raised our hands and then we were successful. But that takes action. We are a people of action. We're not just a people of thought. We have to get moving. Dabera b'nei Yisrael v'Yisrael. Rosh Hashanah tells Moshe Rabbeinu, now is not a time to start davening. Now is not a time to stop. And Hashem has great things in store for us. And then we see later on, that we went in and we walked out on dry land, and all the while the Mitzrim were taken away in the Yam. So I give everybody the bracha, because it's a beautiful bracha to share, that we should have confidence in all our endeavors, that we should be happy with ourselves, and we should see the potential within, and then we should exercise it. I want to wish everyone a successful and productive week, and one that's filled with confidence. This is Mordechai Plotzker from Elizabeth, New Jersey, wishing you and yours all the very best. Have a great night.